Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a fierce competitor on this season of Tournament of Champions, making restaurant-quality cooking accessible at home. She is a chef, instructor, and cookbook author. It's Nini Nguyen. Nini, welcome to the podcast. How have you been?
I've been really well. Thank you for having me. I've been doing a lot of different things.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. Yeah, I worked with Eric Agipong recently. We were reminiscing about Ilene Brewfest, which was almost exactly 4 years ago. And as you kind of just alluded to, you have been a busy lady since then. And I'm so excited to dive into everything that you've been up to. But first of all, congratulations on making the qualifiers for season 5 of Tournament of Champions, which premieres this weekend. What was it like competing for a slot in the East Coast qualifier?
I would have to say it was scary at first, but it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I've never competed in that kind of way. And the randomizer is evil, like equal parts evil and hilarious. Like, I'm like, am I really doing this? Is this really? And then you have to go.
Yeah.
But it was so much fun. I think it's like kind of a dream. I've watched Food Network all my life. And so it was really surreal, but I got to meet so many cool people and it was just a really terrific experience.
Was that your first time meeting Guy?
Yes.
What were your impressions?
Oh my goodness. He has the best memory. Oh my goodness. Like, he's such a kind person and he's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned the randomizer. So I can assume that you feel that it is just as daunting as it looks on TV.
When you're sitting comfortably on your couch watching something, you're like, oh yeah, I'll totally do this, this, this. When you're there with like an audience and just like all the lights, you're just like a deer in headlights and you're just like, what is happening to me right now?
Well, we are so excited to see you compete and see how far you go. What was the one lesson that you took away from the entire experience?
Don't plan anything.
Really?
Like, I think when you go in, I guess like every chef has like their like recipe, not recipes, but like a list of things that they do really well. Mm-hmm. And you could have that, but you have to be very nimble when competing on this like I don't know.
This format, yeah.
Yeah, this format. I'm like, it's not a game. Definitely not a game. It's a competition.
Fierce competition.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I think everyone's going to, at least I hope I'm entertaining.
I have a feeling you will be. Well, we are so excited to see how it all unfolds, because I feel like, you know, this is one of those competitions that just keeps getting bigger and more grand and more competitive each season. So season 5 on deck this weekend, and we're so excited to see how it all plays out. But I kind of want to take everything back before we get into your present, you know, culinary status. Let's take a step back and chat about where it all began. What is your earliest food memory?
I would say my earliest food memory is, of course, it's going to be like super cliche, but it's with my grandma. Surprise.
Yeah.
Like every chef. But I think it was going to the farmer's market with her. And when I say farmer's market, I'm not thinking like cute Union Square farmer's market. I'm thinking like unregulated, just like Vietnamese people, ice on the ground with like tons of seafood and vegetables and a butcher, and everyone's just yelling. Like, it's not like, it's not like calm, but going to the farmer's market with her and buying things, and she was always very particular. She had really high standards. And then making like a meal with her for the family on the weekends. We would always make something special. Mm. I think that's probably my earliest food memory.
Is there a particular maybe like meal or recipe or dish from your grandmother that you find yourself kind of recreating or incorporating into your culinary creations today?
Yeah. Well, my grandmother is a very talented cook, and she is really good at pickles. But I think another thing that she used to make that she would sell at the markets were these like rice, like steamed rice crepes called bánh cuốn. And luckily I got to like sit and practice. She showed me how to do it. You steam it on a piece of fabric.
Okay.
And so she sewed a piece of fabric just for like my pot. Oh. And we got to like spend a weekend making it. And I think that is one of my favorite things. And it's such a, to do it the old school way is so old school and like kind of hard, but it yields the best, the thinnest crepes.
You talk about these Vietnamese roots and these memories, but you're also a New Orleans native, where there is, you know, quite the Vietnamese community there. But I imagine that the culinary influences are very intertwined between, you know, your Vietnamese heritage and also Creole cuisine. Can you kind of share some vivid early memories or experiences that stand out of that?
Yeah, I think I talk about this a lot. And as an adult, I try to map out like the reasoning of like why Vietnamese people came to New Orleans particularly. Mm-hmm. And it's because it reminds them of home. From the climate, it's hot. From the architecture, like in some areas of Vietnam, it looks like France. Mm-hmm. And in New Orleans, it does too. So there's some familiarity. But I could think of like Café Du Monde coffee. That is the coffee of Vietnamese people. Like we make our Café Sa Đa, which is our Vietnamese coffee with sweet condensed milk on ice with Café Du Monde coffee. Beignets is like one thing that we really love, and that's the cross. Like we have ours with sesame seeds. I feel really lucky that I have two different types of cuisines that I could really pull from. I feel like that's kind of my unique style now that I'm like a chef and I've cooked for a while now. And I think that's what people know me for.
What was the moment, though, in your life where you kind of felt this pull towards cooking professionally?
So I started as a pastry cook, and I was in college. My family was like, go to school, try to like get a real job. and I was like, all right, yeah, that sounds great, college, cool. Last year of college, I'm in business school. I go to this bakery called Sucre, and I walk in, and it was the cutest like store. Everything was pastel. They had all these like French desserts, like entremets and macaroons and chocolate. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is it. I want to be a chef, and I want to be a pastry chef. And so I got fixated on it. And I just knew. I was like, well, I graduated in like 2009 and nobody was getting a real job at that time. The market had just crashed. I was like, I'm getting paid more to like serve tables than I would an entry level in marketing. And so I was like, sure, I'm just gonna go for it. I finished college because I was so close. I was like, I'm gonna do this for the family. And then I'm gonna go, and I enrolled in culinary school for a semester in New Orleans. And then I quickly learned that I didn't have to really go to culinary school. It's not a waste of money, but if you really love cooking or if you really want to learn how to cook, go work at restaurants. They'll pay you to teach you how to cook and you can pick who you learn from. And I think that's where I think my 22-year-old self, I was like, thank you for making some really good decisions. And I had no clue. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was lucky and I knew what I wanted and I worked for really good people. And yeah, it's kind of wild because I was like dumb.
and yet wise beyond your years, apparently.
Yeah. Who knew?
Who are some of those people that you chose to learn from?
So working at Sucre, there was a pastry chef, Tark, who, like, fundamentals, they cranked out so many different desserts and confections. And I was lucky enough, they hired me to kind of float between all the stations. And they quickly realized that I love efficiency. So then I would go in and I would, like, make every station more efficient. And in return, I got a crash course on how to like produce so many different desserts or techniques that I would not have learned if I were to do it at like a restaurant where it was at a smaller scale. So I was a toffee queen. I didn't even need a thermometer. I could make toffee like blindfolded. And so I really honed in on those skills. And then I worked at a restaurant called Coquette. Here in New Orleans, and it had been nominated for James Beard. And when I was there, it was like everyone was young. Everyone was really fun. We partied probably way too much. But it was very experimental. Farmers would come and bring produce on their trucks, and we would just pull what we liked. And then we would make the weirdest stuff. But like it was delicious. I don't know. I would make like praline duck skin, and then, or like I would make like weird desserts or like components. And then if I didn't like it for a dessert, then the savory crew would be like, we'll use it as a crumble for like this dish. And so that's where I became really good friends with my friend Mason Hereford. He is like the sandwich king, turkey and the wolf. And he would always take the things I didn't like. I'm like, I messed this up. He's like, we're gonna turn it into something good. And that was a really cool experience. So I got to learn how to make like plated desserts. There was a really great pastry chef, Zach Miller, who just came from New York. And I knew that if I wanted to move to New York, I had to get some restaurant experience. And I was like, this is the perfect person. He just came from New York. He's making like Michelin star type desserts. I want to learn everything from him. And then so having like Tark and him, so I had like production, can make anything, chocolate, sugar, all of it. And then going into a restaurant world, I was well equipped to go to New York. And then I worked at 11 Madison Park. I just pretty much told you my resume.
No, I love it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And bury the lead there. You know, I worked at 11 Madison Park, you know, like that's like, it's like no big deal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a fancy restaurant. Like, my mom didn't even know what it was. She's like, what's that? And I'm like, oh, it's nothing.
It's nothing. No big deal, Mom. Don't worry about it. As you were beginning this journey as a pastry chef, I'm curious to know if there were any standout early creations that really kind of hold a special place in your culinary repertoire today.
I would say, I'm trying to think. If I had to pick something, it would be like a modernization of like Vietnamese desserts because they have such a unique texture. And so trying to elevate that I did a couple like earlier on that I really love. And sometimes it'll like show up on menus, but I don't get to like exercise that side of my brain as much anymore these days.
No, but you all are exercising different parts as well, especially as you've been kind of sharing your culinary knowledge with others as a cooking instructor. What inspired you to kind of take on that role?
I've always loved teaching, like from teaching line cooks how to do things properly and show them like, oh, what to look for, when did you mess up, and how to change that. It's just like what excites me the most. And I also, right before like I did Top Chef, I was teaching, I developed a cooking school in Brooklyn called Cookspace. And I was a culinary director, and I got to teach like normal people how to cook like restaurant level food. And that's really my passion. This is what I really want to do and I love. And then Top Chef came on. My second season was during the pandemic. So it was like the most viewed Top Chef season because everyone was at home and everyone had to figure out, like, restaurants are closed. Now we have to figure out how to cook. And here I am. I'm like, I've been teaching people for a while. I turned it into like virtual classes. And I think that's really where I tapped in to my Vietnamese cooking. I was like, I'm going to teach people how to make Vietnamese food, make it a lot easier. And I didn't think so many Vietnamese people would it like join, because I'm like, they have their moms or aunts or whatever. So many people joined and it was really touching. And I just, it's probably the best thing I've done in my career is like my virtual cooking classes. Now I feel like I have friends all over the world. And it's really satisfying.
What's so satisfying about that moment where you can kind of see the light bulb go off for somebody, you know, like learning to master something or at least do something for the first time?
I think because I did it on Zoom, I got to see people's kitchens. So like sometimes we would have like pastries, I would have cream puffs, and everyone's oven is different. So then I would be like, okay, once your timer goes on, like, put your camera right by the oven, open it up really quick, and I'll tell you if you need to adjust your oven temperature. Like, if you see this, lower it down or keep it higher. And I got to, like, I feel like it's like yoga. Whenever the yoga instructor comes and, like, fixes your posture, like, I got to do that with people. And then people would be so excited because they would make it look just like mine with the equipment that they have. And so then everyone would post it and they're like, you made that? And so like, and I don't know. It's just so satisfying getting people really excited.
Coming up next, we learn Nini's secret skill and her sound advice for anyone starting out in the kitchen.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
We talked about your resume and you've cooked and worked for all these amazing people. How do you kind of strike that balance between empowering people to make these restaurant quality dishes at home, but also still making it accessible to them and not scary, I guess?
I think one thing I really like to encapsulate in my classes is to let people know that you have taste. Like, everybody has their own taste, and, you know, make things the way you like to eat it. Don't fixate on the recipe or whatever. Like, you taste it. And if you like it, then it's going to be great. I think, like, food is just food, and it's not really that hard. Like, yes, there are some things that are, like, crazy with chemicals and stuff like that, but the food that I really like to make is kind of everyday food, just with a little bit of pizzazz, I like to say. But I don't know. I think that might be, like, my secret skill is being able to kind of, not necessarily dumb it down, but make it way more approachable for the home cook to understand, and just using, like, simple terms and just being very descriptive.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's somebody out there listening right now that's, you know, hesitant to get in the kitchen and really, you know, try their hand at cooking, what advice do you have for just starting off and building that confidence?
I would say, I had a whole, like, cooking with confidence, like, series, but I would say that I would just experiment. What's the worst that can happen? You can experiment. If it doesn't taste that great, it's still going to be edible and it's going to be fine. I think the more you practice, the better you'll get. And I used to make really disgusting things as a kid. Like, when I first started cooking or trying to cook, oh man, I felt bad for my parents. I'd be like, look what I made, y'all. And sometimes it would be good. And that's, like, what kept me going. But sometimes it would be real bad. And I would be like, I'm not going to do that again. And you just have to, you know, I guess it kind of is with life. Like, some people, they just, like, don't want to do it unless they're going to, like, be the best as soon as they, like, touch a spatula. But that's not the case. No one is that talented. Like, you have to make a lot of gross things before you start making delicious things. And as long as you learn from it, you're only going to get better and your food's going to get better.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more, because I think even if you've been cooking for a long time, you can still make one mistake and it's, you know, it's gross, or it's not as good as, you know, like you were hoping it would turn out. But I think that that's good advice to just, you know, keep going and see what happens. You know, as my boyfriend likes to say, you know, break things and then put them back together, kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I've been cooking for a long time, and sometimes I make some gross things. Don't tell my competitors, though. I make delicious stuff every time, so be scared. But I do. I mess things up sometimes.
Yeah. No, I think that that's definitely a good thing to keep in mind. And, you know, another thing that I love about, you know, following your adventures is how much you do love to travel. And seems like a lot of those travels really, you know, influence a lot of your cooking. And you describe going to Vietnam for the first time as kind of this culinary aha moment. Can you share more about that trip and the moment where everything kind of clicked for you?
So I have to kind of take a step back. My mom's family mm-hmm. is originally from the north. They moved to the south of Vietnam in the 50s. And that's the grandmother I'm the most closest to. And so I speak Vietnamese with a northern accent, but my dad's side is from the south. And so I never understood why both grandmas, like, they had their own versions of the dishes, and some dishes one had, some the other didn't. And it didn't make sense until I got to Vietnam. And I was like, oh, I get it now. Some of the terms, some of the dishes, some of their flavor profiles. And it's like it's so hard for me to like kind of describe, but it just made like everything made sense. Like you see like your whole life and you're like, oh my God, like, you know, it's like a thriller at the end where, you know, you figure out all the little things and it all like maps out and you're like, oh, that's how it felt like when I went to Vietnam. I was like, oh, like in the South, it's a little spicier, a little sweeter because of all the coconuts, the lime. And like in the North, it's more like salty vinegar base and herbs and just, I feel like a little bit more like Chinese influence. And so it was really eye-opening and it was just a wonderful experience that I feel very, very lucky to have had. I've been to Vietnam twice.
Are there specific, you know, bites of food or dishes that you experienced during either of those trips that like still stick with you?
Everything I ate in Hue. So Hue is in central Vietnam.
Okay.
And we don't see that a lot in America. So like in America, we are more familiar with South Vietnamese food where you have pho with the hoisin sauce and sriracha, whereas in the North, they don't have that. And in Hue, it's like the central, like that's a dialect like no one in Vietnam understands. Like they speak completely, like you were like, are we specific, like speaking the same language, but the food is incredible. That's where the emperor used to live. And so they would have all these like very intricate dishes like dumplings and clams and spicy soups. And like everything in that region is kind of my favorite.
Did either of these trips like inspire specific changes or innovations in your own personal approach to your cooking?
Yes, I think there are a lot of food trends in Vietnam because it's a kind of a younger population. And so there was a lot of fun things to eat in the street. And I've gotten to like take that home because like I'm like, I've never seen like grilled rice paper with like meat and like mayonnaise and all this stuff, like cheese sometimes. It was like kind of like an afternoon snack kind of food. And so that was really fun and seeing things that I just had never seen before and bringing it back. But there are some food cities like Houston, Texas, that really keeps up with all the like food trends in Vietnam. So I like to go there too if I can't make it to Vietnam.
Well, speaking of which, we are thrilled about your upcoming cookbook, Doc Biet. And for anybody who is not familiar, I guess, first of all, can you share what that means in Vietnamese and why you chose it for your debut book?
Yeah. Doc Biet means like it could mean a variety of things. So what most people might see if they've ever eaten pho, pho Doc Biet is pho with everything. So it could mean with everything. It could mean the special. It could mean distinguished. So like if you wanted to elevate something, this is the more premium, more Doc Biet version. And then in Vietnamese American slang, it's like if you're being extra, you're being Doc Biet. And so I felt like it was like everything that encapsulates me. Like I am Doc Biet. I am as Doc Biet as you can be. And I think that my food is also very Doc Biet. And so I'm just very happy that I got to have like a Vietnamese title because like I don't think it fully registers when you see Doc Biet, like that doesn't really necessarily scream like that's a Vietnamese cookbook.
I mean, what inspired you to embark on this cookbook journey in the first place?
It was really the Vietnamese people who came to my cooking classes. I would always ask like, why did you come? Or people would like pour so much love to me afterwards. And they're like, it was either like they might have lost their parents or they have a language barrier or their parents won't teach them because they want them to like better assimilate into this country. But everyone wanted to have a connection with their heritage. And a lot of the Vietnamese cookbooks that you see in the bookstores are all in English. They don't really have the Vietnamese titles. And I thought that was very important to make sure that like the dishes that I made are tied to like our heritage. And if they didn't, then it doesn't have a Vietnamese title, but you know, I don't know how to say jambalaya in Vietnamese. but I felt like it was very important. And I think just like the language, a lot of Vietnamese Americans don't speak Vietnamese anymore. I want to keep it alive. And so a lot of the dishes that you might see are very popular dishes, but then there's also like the like Tuesday night, your mom's lazy meal. Like I have those kind of meals in the book too. And I think it's because we've all kind of had like similar, I don't know. There's like one where I'm thinking of, it's like steamed cabbage and then like a soft boiled egg with like a fish sauce, dipping sauce, and like you eat it with rice. And it's like the easiest, cheapest meal, but everyone's mom's made that when she was like too tired. And she's like, I can't make dinner. Like this is dinner. And yeah, it's really to just make sure Vietnamese food doesn't die.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned jambalaya as well. So I guess safe to assume that there is a blend of what we were talking about earlier, some Vietnamese and some New Orleans cooking. Is there a specific dish that kind of encapsulates that for you in the book?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. You know, I come from New Orleans and I could not
of course
sneak like a little bit of New Orleans in. So like, and like Viet Cajun food has become so popular as of recent. So I do have like a Viet Cajun boil. And then I have a jambalaya, like a seafood jambalaya with that tastes like both. It tastes like jambalaya, but then it's like lemongrass and Thai basil and like very Southeast Asian. And so it's pretty, there's some nods, you know, like we have like a po' boy, bánh mì bread. They're very similar bread. So there's like a cross between that too. It's majority a Vietnamese cookbook, but in the eyes of someone who grew up on the Gulf Coast.
Okay. I love that. I wanted to ask you about your nails as well, because I know that was, you know, an aspect that you really wanted to include in the book. Why was that so important to you?
I think this book is really like, to me, a celebration of Vietnamese culture and like the Vietnamese American culture, like what I know, what I've grown up with, and the industries that Vietnamese people in America really kind of dominate, I guess, is the nail industry and the seafood industry. So like half of my family, my grandma shucked oysters, my uncles made crab traps, my dad deep sea fish. So like there's like the seafood side, and then my mom, my aunts, my grandma, my dad's side, they all do nails. And it was something that we were really kind of ashamed of. You didn't need an education, but it made a decent living, and everyone kind of taught each other how to do it and like open their nail salons. And I think that it's so mainstream now to have like the coolest nails and all this stuff. And I really don't think that we should be ashamed of it. Like I always thought if I didn't finish school, there was always nails that I could do. Luckily, I found another job that my parents probably
another like artistic, you know, yeah, field.
Yeah. But nails are really important. And I kind of want to scream and shout and say, like, we don't need to be ashamed. And it is like artistry. And we should be really proud that this is kind of our contribution to like mainstream culture. And it's like having really cool nails. I have really cool nails right now. It's for Lunar New Year. Y'all can't see it, but I have like dragons and lotus flowers on my nails. And it's just, it's kind of cool to see the thing that like my mom was so ashamed of be cool to do and like celebrate it. And so this is a book to kind of celebrate her.
That's amazing. Do you do your own nails or do you have friends or family take care of that portion?
I don't do my own nails anymore. And I'm too particular. I'm too particular to let my family do it because they're going to be like, I can't stand when Nini comes. So I pay to get my nails done now. My mom's always like, you should come here and I'll do it. And I was like, no, because then if I'm like, it's crooked, she's going to be like, no, it's not, your finger's crooked. And then we're going to have a fight. So for the sanity of to save our relationship, I do get my nails done with my friend Jane. She does my nails and she does crazy stuff.
Well, I'm excited to see all of the imagery in the cookbook of that, but also the food. Do you have any recipes in the book that you're, you know, particularly excited for readers to try?
I mean, like all of it, really. I think I can't, like, there, I guess I should have prepared for this, because this is always a question, like, is there a recipe that you love the most in your book? And I'm like, I love all of it. Probably
like your
equally.
Children. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I think if I really had to pick one, it would be like my comfort food. Whenever I would come home, it's the most simple dish that you can make in like 30 minutes. I think you might have made it with me on
one of the Zoom. Is it the beef rib?
No, it's ginger and chicken.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Like, that's like the easiest thing. You can whip it up in 30 minutes. And it's something my mom always makes. And it's what I ask for from my mom. Mm-hmm. That might be the easiest and like most delicious. And people are always like, I make that once like a week or two times a month now. Mm-hmm. I think that could be, I'm going to have to really think on that.
But. No, but you know what? Actually, now that you mentioned that, I need to like revisit that one as well, because I remember all of those things that you just said, that it was super flavorful, very easy, and very much lends itself to like a weeknight meal that's in your rotation constantly. So
yeah,
I think that was a good answer. So maybe keep that one. All right. I have to ask one last question, because people listening probably did not get a chance to hear your little roommate piping in throughout this interview, but your dog Tofu, tell us about him, and does he ever get to enjoy any of your culinary creations?
Tofu is 4 years old. He's a white, crusty-eyed dog. He barks too much, but he actually hates when I cook.
Really?
Like, this is like where my feelings get hurt the most is, you know, everyone's dogs always, like they're always like right at your foot, you know, when you're cooking because they want to eat. Tofu hates it. He hates when I'm cooking anything. If the stove's on, he will move to the other room and like, or the furthest room, or like by the front door when we were in our like New York apartment. And I would take it so personally. I'm like, what kind of dog is this? He doesn't even want to eat my cooking. And he's like, if he only knew his mom was a chef.
Right?
He doesn't care.
If he only knew how good he had it.
I know. He does not care.
All right. Well, Tofu is not like your food, but I'm sure everybody is going to be so excited to dive into this cookbook and start enjoying all these creations, even if Tofu is not a fan. So congratulations on the cookbook. We're looking forward to seeing that come out, and of course, seeing how you do on Tournament of Champions. We're going to finish things off with a little rapid fire round, and then we have one final question for you. All right. Rapid fire questions. Secret to the perfect martini.
I am martini me. I would say for me, I'm a gin martini. I like it dry. It's only, my martini is only two ingredients, and it's a Japanese vermouth and a Japanese gin, Roku, and then Bermudo, I think is what the vermouth is called. But that's like, to me, my favorite combo for the martini, and a twist.
Yes.
I love olives, but I don't like an olive.
You want a
in
twist.
My,
in yeah. Your, I love yeah. that. I love Roku as well. All right. Describe the randomizer in one word.
Troll. It is a troll. It's a troll. I was like, hilarious. No, but like trolls can be funny.
That's actually a really great word. Favorite song on your cooking playlist?
Right now, probably anything Bad Bunny.
Okay.
Or Bad Bunny. This is what my friends would always say, but yeah.
Your go-to comfort meal.
It would be this is a weird dish, but it's something my grandma always makes whenever it's in season, but it's eggs, like fish eggs in the sack, mm-hmm. simmered with caramelized like pork belly.
Okay.
And mustard greens. Like that's my death row meal.
Yum. I love that. Okay. Well, that might be part of your last question as well, but we'll get there in a second. Easiest pottery project for beginners.
I love that y'all know that I did pottery, but I would say hand building, like making plates. Just like if you can make a sheet of clay, you can make a plate.
Mm. All right. Favorite New Orleans spot?
I just recently went to like an old institution. It's called Clancy's. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a neighborhood New Orleans New Orleans restaurant, like a really, and it's so good. I went the first time in December and now I'm like mad that I didn't go sooner. But that's probably my favorite spot right now.
All right. I'm putting that on the list for my next trip. Go-to sauce,
I guess it would be Nước Mắm. Nước Mắm Chấm is like what most people know. It's a Vietnamese condiment with like lime, chilies, garlic, sugar, and fish sauce. And it's literally our ketchup. Like we put it on everything.
but like way better than ketchup. So
yes, so better than ketchup. I mean, I like ketchup. I'm team ketchup too.
I mean, I love ketchup also, but yeah.
I'm team like any condiment really. But
that's
the one. It goes well with everything.
All right. Okay. Our final question. This is the question we ask everybody at the end of our interviews here on Food Network Obsessed. And that is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So we want you to take us through, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. This question has no rules. So obviously calories don't count. You can travel. You can time travel. Mm-hmm. You can do whatever you want. We just want to hear, if there were no restrictions, what your ideal food day would look like.
Okay. I would wake up and probably have pho. Pho is actually a breakfast food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, if I'm hungover, I want pho. Like, do not talk to me until I have pho. It's like, it's a very soothing, healing soup. So pho for breakfast. If I were to really have lunch, it would either be like a bowl of really delicious pasta or a po' boy, a shrimp po' boy, to be exact. I don't know. This is hard. I want Mexican food or Mexican food.
Well, you can have multiple things. Again, there's no rules. So you can kind of roll a bunch of things into one if you want.
I wish you could eat everything. I can't pick because I'm also a very indecisive person. But
same.
But I would say, I mean, I love Vietnamese food. So I would probably just have like a traditional Vietnamese meal where it's like rice is our base. Like everybody has a bowl of rice. And then we have like a meat, a fish, a vegetable, a soup, some pickles. And it's just like you are your own chef and you get to like pick and choose what your next bite is. Like to me, that is the best way to eat. And I usually eat way too much in like a good way.
Yeah.
And then for dessert, I would have a creme brulee. And simple.
Perfect. Yeah, simple, sweet, little sweet ending to a perfect day. So thank you so much for sharing that and for sharing your story. And again, best of luck with all of your exciting endeavors this year.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This is so much fun. And I can't wait for everyone to watch.
You can check out Nene on Tournament of Champions starting February 18th on Food Network. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code MOM.